This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Well, this is Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 381. Welcome. This is the podcast sponsored by No One. And while we are Super Steve-less, we do have me, Andrew the LA Rabbit, WWX Kev. Yep.
What was that? That was unexpected, Andrew.
And the Ottawa Otter, Phil.
Hello. Two episodes ago, I heard you guys talking shit about me when I wasn't here. You guys said that if you wanted to hurt me, you'd bash Zinescope, but then Andrew got it right by Puppet Master. That definitely would have been what hurts me. Yeah, so now I know never to leave an episode again.
Well, then I had to take a break, and you guys had to pile some barbs, some sharpened barbs at me.
Hey, stop going to these little kid shows all the time, then Disneyland or whatever.
But the only one that's safe is Kevin, because he... No. On all these shows.
Yeah, am I supposed to rotate out at some point?
Nope, we need you. At least one, that'll be one person then. I wouldn't say the glue.
No, I probably wouldn't say that either. That's why I was sort of more
a
glue.
You're maybe more of a paperclip.
Paperclip. I'll be your paperclip. Well,
this is the show where we talk about comic books that are not originating from the big two. But you can also hear some of us sometimes over on Marvel Noise. Both shows are part of the Deliberate Noise Network. The show is on Twitter at Indie Comic Book N. We're all on Twitter under our individual handles, WWXKev, me and my sloth, and I am LA_Rabbit1. I'm led to believe that Indie Comic Book Noise has a Facebook fan page that you can go and like our page
and thanks
see
for
all kinds of stuff. And I think that's it for social media contacts. But let's start the ball rolling. So while we have no Super Steve, we're going to plunge ahead and give you a slate full of fun books to read.
And what you guys don't know is this intro took 40 minutes.
Phil, you need to stop peeling back the curtain.
I can't help it.
Ruins the romance.
Hey, this time it wasn't about DC Comics either, so that's progress.
Well, technical difficulties notwithstanding.
No, Phil, Kevin, why don't you... Kevin difficulties.
Phil, why don't you pop up with our first book of the day?
You jerk. You knew I wanted Kevin to go first. You asshole. Boy, have I been... Hold on, I just gotta pull this away from this little chihuahua because it's making noise. I've been on a journey and a half, and not a good one.
Uh-oh.
So, as you know, I'm a big fan of the Puppet Master comic, and they have two other properties out now that are in comic form by Action Lab, which I'm obviously going to cover all three. Not all today, though. So what I've been doing is I've been watching all the old movies to fill me in. So I watched 11 to 12 Puppet Master movies. Guess how many I liked?
One.
13 of them.
Zero.
Wow.
It was fucking horrendous. But the good thing about it, yes, I waste a lot of time, a lot of my life, yes. But it made me like the comics even more. Because I realized just how good the comics are, because they're filling in the holes and doing the stuff that the movie should have done. Like, for example, in the third movie, at the very end of the movie, they have this awesome character, like this human kind of puppet, kind of going away with the other puppets to go to an asylum and kind of fuck with the kids there. But they never followed it up in any of the other movies. But I know it sounds stupid the way I said it, but it's a neat scene. And in the Puppet Master comic, they didn't do what the movie would have done. They did the sequel as if there was a first one. And it was just really neat. Like, so it filled in a lot of holes, which was really cool. So then I watched other things. So the one I'm talking about today is Gingerbread Man.
Phil, I think you mean the Ginger Dead Man. I have that book too.
You're right. Oh my God, that's the one you were going to talk about, right?
That was my surprise. I actually went to a comic store for the first time in a long time, and I said, I bet you Phil's going to have one of these, and I saw it on the shelves.
Right. I still had one copy, and it was just for me.
Well, I have the Dan Mendoza cover.
I'm not sure what cover. It starts with S, the last name on the cover, so that would be... I don't see cover credits in mine.
So it's got to be the regular cover. It's just got the
little... Yes, the regular. That's right. Band. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So you got the girl with the spoon.
Yes. What made me laugh is it's limited. So there's two variant covers each with 1,500 copies. And I'm thinking, yep, like, I don't think this book's going to sell more than three or four grand. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, technically it's limited, but I don't see... You know what I mean? Like, I don't see this thing selling 5,000 copies or whatever, but yes.
I'd be surprised if it sold 200, like, to be honest. Because Gingerbread Man, for one thing, it's not a... Like, Puppet Master and a lot of the older ones are a little more culty because they were more better quality back then and they were fun, like, for the 80s and all that and 90s. But Gingerbread Man was one of the later ones where it had, like, Gary Busey was the Gingerbread brand. Gingerbread... You know what I mean? And but they were like they're really dumb movies and like really cheesy and so this is yeah, I don't see this one having a big following or anything like Puppet Master would, so it wouldn't be selling at all probably. Yeah,
well, it just made me laugh. I mean, like, yeah, it's limited, but mm-hmm. if there's 3,000 variants, there probably is at least at that, there might be less of the regular cover.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Because like I say, my store had one. How many copies did your store have?
I just saw this one sitting on the shelf. So
that's just it, yeah. Like, stores it's probably get it the most.
Brockton McKinney and Sergio Rios. Sorry, colors by Marcelo Costa.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you didn't watch the movies like me.
I mean, if it didn't have the Full Moon Presents in the top mm-hmm. corner, I wouldn't have even known that this was based on a movie.
Okay.
Certainly, that's the art true. Style is very that kind of very loose and free. That it's not like they're trying to make it look like.
No.
I mean, I don't know if these are characters from the movie, but they don't have a like that. You know, sometimes when they do a, like a likeness, maybe even if you can't mm-hmm. tell who the actor is, it looks like they're trying to make it look like that actor.
No, there's no reoccurring characters in this.
Okay.
From the movies. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm completely unfamiliar with the Ginger except Dead
for,
Man.
Except for the Ginger Dead Man, obviously. But.
Yes. But I was, yeah, it certainly read like one of those 80s kind of horror movies with the punk gang that all had, you know, it's like the...
Well, this was 2000s, I believe, when Gingerbread Dead Man
came out. Okay.
The movies.
But, I mean, the gang felt right out of a central casting type of movie.
Mm-hmm. I didn't, like, compared to Puppet Master, I didn't enjoy this one at all. Like, this comic, because, like, you know what part really bugged me? They're cooking these cookies, but for one thing, they keep saying cookies, but it's just a bowl of dough. But it had one of those things which I hate happen in horror movies where they'll like blood will or like a zombie affection type thing will go into food, you know, and it's plainly visible, but the people still cook it or eat it anyway. Like there's this thing's covered in blood. Like,
well, remember they're supposed to be one of them's high, and yeah. The other one's just an idiot.
Which is off like this this type of drug I think they found it. Which it's not cocaine, but it's like that. It's like a powder.
Yeah, it's some kind of unspecified drug that's too potent. So what they're trying to do is cut it by putting it in cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it in, they use some kind of weird magic dough and it mixes with the drugs and makes this ginger dead man who talks. Why I thought the 80s was he talks in action hero cliches. Okay. So it's all like puns.
Yeah, well, that's how he is in the movies, punny, but I don't know if... I don't remember anything specific he said, though, like...
No, but, it's kind of generic, like icing on the cake, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're gonna... And so he does one guy in with a frosting gun that he...
I was just looking at that page.
And yeah, takes a blender to another guy's head.
What about the finger penis?
That's yeah, the only I part didn't know I like. We're gonna spoil the.
We might. No one's like you said. No one's getting this comic. We can spoil it, and plus it's not out of the Full Moon comics. I would say skip this one anyway. You know, so I don't think it's bad to spoil that.
To give a super quick plot, this gang has this potent drug, and they break into this abandoned bakery, and the leader of the gang is like, "We're gonna make these cookies," and it's next door to like. A older sister and her younger brother. The younger brother's rebelling against this older sister, and they run a little shop. And so they make this dough that creates the ginger dead man. He kills them all with clever bakery-based quips and bakery equipment, like a mixer and all this.
Toaster.
I did like the kind of foul-mouthed old man that they kick out of the store.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I thought he's that was
interesting. Yeah, part. He's trying to warn everyone, but he has like Tourette's or something, or I don't know, but he keeps swearing and saying gross things. I like when she kicks him out and he knows just to leave. Like, but yeah, so it's true. Yeah, he was okay.
Yeah, and he ends up getting done in.
Yeah.
By the ginger dead man, and then that's when the ginger dead man notices that he has kind of long fingers.
Yes.
And so he uses one of his fingers to replace his own genitalia. So the final page splash is the ginger dead man with this old guy's finger pointing straight out like a penis.
Yes. So, you know what, though? I am going to pick up the other ones. Because I feel like I don't know, the Full Moon stuff. I just have that collector's mentality, you know, where you saw it with the Valiant shit I did. Where I probably will get them all, but I'm not enjoying it like I did Puppet Master for sure.
Well, do you want this variant cover, Phil? It may find its way to you.
Yeah,
I don't.
The Santa Claus of the show.
I think I'm going to bow out of the Ginger Dead Man series.
Yeah, I should too, but I don't know.
The I mean, it's not. It's just that kind of like those kind of goofy quips and everything aren't anything that does it for me, really. And also, I feel like in some instances, if that was my thing, why wouldn't I just watch the movies in a way? And sometimes I feel like when adapting to other media,
oh, I don't believe that,
'cause something new.
I find some stuff has been done so well, like that 28 Days Later comic I love. That brought off, it was better than the movies.
True.
Like there's the Hellraiser stuff is amazing. Like there's a lot of stuff that I like. I find the horror stuff usually is can be done pretty well. Like the Friday the 13th movies and stuff I don't like too much, but I like the comics.
Oh, I think, but you have to bring something new, and I felt like, yeah, this was like the 28 Days Later, they really took a very stylized artist. Mm-hmm. And that really brought more to the table, I think, that gave it an atmosphere.
Yeah.
And this, like, I don't know, just that kind of jokey tone and everything. I guess there's the juxtaposition of sort of the cartoony art with the gore and extreme.
The art I had no problem with. The art never bugged me at all, really.
No.
Like, not that it was amazing or anything, but it was fun.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that juxtaposition might have been the only thing. Sort of like something like you talked about I Hate Fairyland, where kind of the cutesy art style is paired up against her being really foul-mouthed and killing everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's what they were going for here. I just don't know that it quite... And, well, when I was younger, I watched horror movies, but I haven't watched horror movies in 20 years with anyone.
It's a big part of my life, horror, for sure. Like, after comics, horror is probably my second geeky thing I'm big on. Did you see the ad in the back, though, for Kingdom Bum?
I did. I have an ad for Tomboy.
All the way in the back.
Oh, yes, the Kingdom Bum one.
That comic looks cool, eh? That picture, like, I like the art, and yes. I'm not sure what it's about, but that's the next one I want to get by Action Lab.
And I thought the back cover with the Infinity Gauntlet parody was a pretty clever ad. I mean, I like that, don't get me wrong, I like Action Lab, and I'm glad they're branching out with the different imprints and everything. It's just that this is just not my... I'm not into those types of horror movies. Well,
this isn't anybody's. Like, if you were to pick one up, I wish it was more a Puppet Master issue. Because at least then I could say, well, I like that. Even if you don't, you know. But
well, and also
you picked a bad one.
Part of me buying this was also like, oh, this is something I bet Phil might grab or whatever.
You were right. You were absolutely right.
All right. Well, we should let Kevin have say on something. Kevin, what have you got for us? Maybe I have that too.
I don't think so. Do you have some... we're straddling this weird line with this book. I don't think you have any Copra, do you?
I looked at it at the LA Comic Arts, that free one in D.C., or the free one here in L.A., and I'm embarrassed to admit it, but the price tag seemed pretty steep. I know people love it, but I was like, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. For some reason, I'd spent a lot of money that day, and he wasn't there. They were just selling it. Mm. So if I'm buying it from the creator, I feel different. But if I'm just buying it from a third party, I'm more price sensitive than I am if you have a table and you're selling it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I happened to get some issues off of Michael Fife, the creator himself, while he was doing a Jam Square for me. But most of the Copra stuff I have in collected editions, because I think it's like $5 or more an issue, but the trades are only $20. So it seems like there's significant saving for me if I buy the collections.
What Jam Square did he do for you?
Venom.
Venom.
Yeah, because it's kind of funny that, yeah, he's like involved in the indie world, but his love for certain like late 80s or early 90s concepts.
Well, of course. Everyone who grew up that makes comics probably, you know, was reading comics then.
Yeah, but I don't think I don't know, maybe they do in their private time, but I guess a lot of people don't go out and say, hey, I'm going to make a Suicide Squad fan comic and print out 200 copies or something for my friends or something like that. Like, that seems...
it's a lot of friends.
It is. But it seems like... a lot more effort than what you usually see. And I guess you didn't know how many people really like Suicide Squad to begin with. So, I don't know. Hey, I'm a fan of Speedball. Like, I don't know, the most indie, like, art comics guy. And then he published, like, a Speedball fan comic. Like, it would be weird because he'd be like, oh, I thought... You know, like, some of those guys are, like, really into their scene. They're just like, screw you, superheroes. And they told me that personally. Like, I seriously showed, like, Jam Squares to people saying, hey, I have a Monsters one and I have a Spider-Man one. And I was literally told, screw you, Spider-Man.
So that's ridiculous. Some of these
guys are dedicated to their scene.
Because there's place for everything.
Yeah, there is. But yeah, I read the second volume called Round 2 of Copra, and I enjoyed it more than the first volume. Which is like he's...
So you didn't enjoy the first one that much, but you picked up the second one still?
I thought the first one was good, but I wasn't in, like, super, super into it. Like, I sort of appreciate, like, the crazy art style and all the different stuff he does with the pages and the characters. And then I read the second volume, and then I'm like, yeah, this has moved from, like, good to... I don't know, what's the next level up from good?
Excellent. Groovy.
Yeah, It's like one of those weird things. It's like if you were to, I don't know, maybe it's like on a grading scale, like or on a star scale, like moving from like 3 stars to 4 stars or however you're gonna classify something like that.
But yeah, well, I don't know if I should go again or if I should skip right over to Phil. I feel like I cut in on his review.
No, I don't think you did.
But what I really enjoy about this, rather than, you know, seeing, like, the DC characters and everything, like, you know, like, one guy has, like, machine guns attached to his arm and everything, and you're like, oh, this is obviously Deadshot. Like, it is not hard to see some of those things, but the thing I really enjoy is, there'll be a speedster character, and it'll be done in, like a pencil, like a blurry pencil. Like, if you put a pencil on its side, you know, you sort of get that sort of blurry effect. So, like, he'll draw characters like that to show some of their superpowers. Or there'll be, like, other splashes or, like, pencil crayon-like stuff when they go to other dimensions. And you're just like, it looks like nothing else. Like, I'm just like, wow, that is awesome. There's even, like, a Doctor Strange guy here where he has the whole blue top with the light blue sort of design in the center, and then, like, the yellow for a belt and everything. I'm like, this is getting off, like, close to Doctor Strange when he's helping, like, these guys escape from one dimension to another. And then it always goes down into one of these, like, major fights where there's, like, 200 people on the page. But instead of, like, showing, like, having a... he does some splashes, but instead of, like, at the end, instead of having, like, the massive splash, he'll just, like, have a 20-panel page and zooming in on all these, like, little encounters and moments and faces that are happening during the fight. It is just unreal. Oh, so good.
Sounds like something I can get into.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great things. It's just that, and I think if he had been there live, I would have bought it, but mm-hmm. I felt like just buying them off of, you know, nobody who didn't feel quite right the same.
Yeah.
Like buying it from the guy himself, like you did.
And I know some of those early issues when people got in on this series, like, they were selling for, like, ridiculous amount of money, like, on eBay for an indie book, because it's like, he was putting together everything, and there was only, like, 400 copies. So as long as you have, like, 500 people that want it or whatever, those prices were, like, going through the roof. Like, that is just crazy.
Well, now you next time you go to sell some books, Kevin, you've got a hot one.
Yeah, I know. I have issues 13, 14, 15.
Of that series you just talked about?
Yeah. It's supposed to go, like, 24 issues.
But you don't have the ones before that?
No. I almost bought them online, like it might have been issue like 5, 6, 7 or something like that, and a compendium, because before the collections he did some stuff like that, and it was just like an online store, because he's like I guess he's kind of like Matt Kint, like he's sort of like putting all these comics together himself and like doing all the work, like usually like the writing, the lettering, the drawing, the color, like there's just so many production things that everyone usually doesn't handle.
Well, as the flood recovery happens, I'm finding more older books to talk about. I mean, they're not super old, but the next series is copyright 2012.
Oh.
So I guess that's a few years ago, and it's the Theory of Magic books.
Are they mangled or water damaged?
No. They are signed, though, so I must have bought them from somebody at the time. And this is J.P. Roth is the creator behind them. So they refer to them as Rothic novel, which I thought, you know, instead of Gothic,
yeah,
it's Rothic, which I thought was pretty cool. But I remember her booth was like, you know, they kind of dressed up in very elaborate things. And the penciler is Sabine Rich. And then each of these has different covers. What I have is kind of like, it's not labeled, but I'm going to assume it reads kind of like the zero issue and then the issue one. And so while Sabine Rich is the pencils and colors, Don McTeague is the cover for one, and Nye Ruffino is the cover for the zero issue, or what I'm calling the zero issue. I don't know what it's really called. And it's basically a world set in late 19th century England, and the conceit is the fairy world is like this world filled with political intrigue, and the fairies have to spend some day as a human or whatever, and at that point they're in a weakened state, so this sets up where this character is going to go to reach her potential, or to, you know, reach her next stage. She has to do it, but the other people are plotting against her. The current existing people on the fairy court are plotting against her because she's going to come into this power, so they don't, you know how it is, you got to set up the intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's a very pretty book. What I guess I didn't realize at the time is it's like really low page count.
Oh, like it's under 22 kind of
thing? Yeah, for sure. And not only that, but there's a lot of like big hole, like chapter one type pages, like book one, November Thorns, and there's a little there's some art on it, but and then there's another one that's just like text where she writes a note. So yeah. if you take those out, like it's even less, and that's not like a fatal thing to it. And there's like a sketch in the back, and
no, but it's not much of a comic then if it has like Hickman does those pages where it's just white and then there'll be a bit of writing. Like it's kind of it looks nice, I guess, but. Yeah. If you don't have a lot of pages afterwards, it's kind of
Sometimes those pages don't count. They're just extra pages, though.
Yeah, maybe for Marvel, but they can afford it.
But this thing's like 16 pages total, not including pages that are kind of roughly fillery. I mean, it's a very pretty book, and it's a lush world. but like you put chapter breaks in it, like you like really
for 16 pages or whatever. No,
like that's a short. And I think probably the best way would be to buy this in some sort of, I assume it's going to be collected by now if it started in 2012, unless it died. If you like the kind of, you know, the world where the fairies are definitely alien. They look like us. I mean, they got wings and they do magic, but there's lots of intrigue in the fairy court, that sort of, you know, in these fantasy books, that's frequently common of different factions pitted against each other. And it feels like that part's realized and everything. It's just, that's a really light issue. I mean, there's probably 10 story pages when you get right down to it. So the first issue feels almost like the zero issue. And the zero issue, where I mean, maybe they just threw it in or whatever. That one's literally like 6 pages long or something.
Wow.
2, 3, 4, 5. 6 story pages, and then a few pages of like the chapter one and the setting page and that type of thing. So a pretty fun book if you like fairies and fantasy, but there's not a lot heavy page count on the theory of magic books, but high production value, you know.
Sounds like something I'd like also. I like that kind of stuff.
I think you would, and I think, you know, it's like attractive looking lady fairies and everything. Seems to be up Phil's alley, if I had to guess.
I don't read any porn comics.
No, they're not porn. They're just, you know, pretty pretty girls in the comics. There's nothing wrong.
Just because my comment on Skype where I said I jerk off to Susan Storm.
Well, who could possibly take that the wrong way?
I don't know.
All right. So, Phil, what else have you got for us?
I think I talked about before how I was excited to collect Kaiju Max, so I didn't want Kevin to review it one time, and I've made him wait like a year.
I know. I kept on saying, I'm not going to get to it then.
Yeah. Well, I read the first 2 issues so far.
Wow.
I just heard an interview with Xander Cannon on Double Page Spread.
And I loved his other book, Prison Pit. That was him, right?
Johnny Ryan, I think, was Prison Pit.
Oh. What did Xander Cannon do then?
Heck? Wasn't that?
Yes, he's done Heck. He also did a lot of breakdowns for like Gene Ha.
Okay, I always thought he was the Prison Pit guy. No shit.
Top 10? Was that him?
Yeah. I mean, it's Gene Ha, but he worked on like helping them out and everything. But Heck was his big...
That's where I know him from, probably top 10, yeah. Okay.
Was his big... And Chainsaw Vigilante was his a spinoff from The Tick.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if any of those are things that seem to be what you kids read nowadays.
Yeah, I've read a lot of that stuff. I like Tick comics. I think they're high quality sometimes, or a lot of them. So yeah, Kaiju Max. I only read the first 2 issues, but it's not what I thought it'd be at all. I thought it'd be more funny, but I didn't find it like a comedy at all. Like, it's called a comedy prison comic or whatever. But yeah, I didn't find any of it really funny. Not that I'm saying it's bad. Like, it was kind of neat. It's basically all the kaijus in the world are put on this island like a prison, like Godzilla, Mothra, you know, like ones like that. And then the humans have like those ultra suits, and they're the wardens, obviously. And so this one follows this one creature, which has like these electricity eggs on his back. He gets captured and brought there. And his kids were left behind where they captured him. So the whole time he's worried about his kids and trying to get word out to them and stuff. And it's just like the awful things that would happen in any type prison. One cool thing is every issue has this like little guy. Remember in She-Ra how in every episode you had to look for like the little creature in the tree or something? They have something like that with the creature in these issues. Yeah, did you guys ever watch She-Ra?
Yeah, but I don't did, remember
but I don't
that.
Remember... The he name would, that.
Yeah, it was the little guy, and he would introduce the show, and then he would say, "Don't forget to look for me hidden somewhere in the episode."
But I'm embarrassed to say I spent most of my time looking at She-Ra and not the little guy.
She-Ra was a good show, I think. I remember I was a huge He-Man and She-Ra fan.
I seem to remember I had a wildly inappropriate crush on her.
Oh, for sure. She was hot. And so, yeah, so this comic was a lot different than I thought, but the art's cool. I like the art style a lot. It's an okay read, but I don't know if I wasn't sucked in enough where I kept on reading the last four issues. Like I don't even know when I'll get to them now, because now I put them on the back burner because I'm reading other stuff. So it just didn't grab me enough, but this was one I was super excited for. What did you think of it, Kevin?
I thought it was good. Of course, I only bought the first issue.
It's good. It's
never went back
problem.
To it, but that's not really a thing about the quality. It's just that there's so many books and everything, so you know, mm-hmm. I never really filtered back in.
I know there's a trade out any day now.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I waited for that instead, because it would look nice as a trade, but I just wish it had more comedy.
Yeah, well, I think I found it funnier than you, because I think I remember posting like certain panels to mm-hmm. to people and going, "Hey, this is funny," or whatever. Or I thought there was like a reference. Was it this book with the Penny Dreadful, or was that another book? I remember there was some references to something, and I was laughing, going, "He made a reference to whatever it was," and I was just like, "Yeah, that's hilarious." But of course, I don't remember now since.
Well, if I didn't know the reference, yeah, maybe if it was references I didn't get, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
It seemed funny to me.
But I can see how it would be like how I mentioned that cat manga the other week, how the cat was like, "What about my, I'm lost, where are my parents?" Like, yeah, some of the monsters were kind of like freaking out over their kids or whatever, and you're like, yeah, that's not in, I don't know if that's really enjoyable, but there's some other good stuff going on.
But I like the storyline with one of the prison guards kind of like sells them drugs and things like that. I kind of like the storyline going on with that.
And wasn't one of them trying to get off the island or something?
One of the monsters?
Yeah, wasn't there something?
Yeah. Yes, there is. I forget who it is though, but he was the one that was going to give word to his kids, I believe.
Yeah.
But then he gives that information to a bad dude.
Yeah. Like, there was some interesting stuff.
Yeah, definitely. But just didn't grab me enough.
And the artwork was really good, too, so.
Yeah, the art, it looks beautiful. And it's a good read. Like, there's lots to read. But maybe you have to be more into the kaiju mythos and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned he was also leaning a lot on the prison tropes, too.
I love prison stuff, though. Like, I was a huge fan of that show Oz.
What about Prison Break?
Prison Break 2? Yeah, prison stuff I eat up because it scares the shit out of me, prison.
This isn't my first Prison Break.
Phil's been scared straight.
Yeah.
They bring kids to prisons and, hey, you want your life to be like this? No.
I'd be the one bawling in the corner, being myself. I got a rapeable face.
It's not your face you need to worry about.
I know, but well, that's the door opener.
We're walking the streets of Toronto, like, I don't know, like 1 a.m., and the thing that Phil tells me repeatedly is, not my face. If we run into some bad dudes or something, just not my face.
Hey, that's what gets me the ladies.
Apparently.
And it's stay in prime form.
It's Canada. How do you have any bad areas?
Oh, Toronto, because they like to think they're the States, so they're all like gangs and shit and all the drunks, because near the bars and stuff.
There's always bad areas in every city.
Dirty city. It's a dirty city.
Well, there goes our chance to get sponsored by the Board of Tourism for Toronto.
Who wants to fucking visit Canada? Go somewhere else.
Nothing happened to us, though. That's the thing. It was okay. Phil might have been concerned, but it was okay.
Was it okay? I feel like I got lost.
Yeah, I think he's pretty scarred, Kevin.
Oh, that's why he doesn't show up again. Post-traumatic stress. It all makes sense now.
And you know what? I did get lost that night because Kevin went to a different hotel, so he left me at some point. It took me like 3 hours to get home that day to the hotel. And then my friends woke up and my shoes were on my hands. It was upside down. It was horrible. I hate Toronto.
From what I've heard, you don't do a whole lot of sleeping there anyways.
No. Canada Comic-Con. It's too exciting.
Yeah, it is.
But not for Andrew, because he goes to a million of them. Yeah, he's lost that Christmas.
Yeah, Andrew, have you went Christmas anywhere within the last week?
Not within the last week, but WonderCon is coming up at the end of the month, so I will be in attendance there.
Anyone specific that you're after, or any comic, or?
Well, I like seeing Frank Avias coming out. Mm-hmm. I'll be sure to pass on your love and admiration, Phil, for his ability to stick to the schedule. But
shit,
he does a lot of stuff.
He does. I'm a big fan all around.
I love his stuff. I'm just butthurt about it because I love that comic so much, you know. So, like, with the second it comes out, I'll be over it and I'll be licking it and coming all over the walls. I'll love it again, you know. So,
Phil's just the spurned lover of.
Yeah, I just need to rant a bit about it because I'm sad it's not out.
Well, Kevin, where does that leave us with your stack of books to talk about?
Oh, I was gonna, you know, when he said you were talking about the Spurn Lover thing, and I've been checking out Scrib to see if they were adding new books. You know, they really haven't been adding like a lot of stuff. And then I saw they added a whack load of Valiant again. So I was just like, oh, like better than, you know, some of the sales. Like there's a lot of books added. So I was just like, do I go back?
You know, this is the old stuff.
How much does Scrib cost you, Kevin?
Like $8 or something.
Is that per month or something?
But I'm like, you could go back for a month.
Yeah, that's cheaper than Marvel Unlimited, yeah, isn't it?
For sure. Do $8 for a month and then read what you want. Go, yeah, and then go back again. That's then, that would be.
And then you got to tell them 15 times when you leave that why you're leaving. But then you just say, well, you don't have like monthly or weekly comics.
Yeah. Well, that's not a subscription type thing you need every month, unless that's the only way you're reading comics. But you're buying comics other places too, so.
Yeah, no, I just noticed a lot of stuff, but I kind of decided, like I don't know if I want to do it now because I kind of decided I was gonna try to pick up like every Valiant book that I missed since it would be easy to do.
Like so. The new stuff or the old stuff?
The new stuff. Like I'm still trying to complete some of the old stuff, but the new stuff I think it would be. There's places that blow out things, so I'm thinking that I could find a lot of blown out new Valiant type stuff and then like own every issue of the universe. Like something like that, it would be fun to do, I think.
Doing them in floppy version, or you don't care what format?
Yeah, it would have to be all in singles, yeah. Cause,
why is that? Wouldn't you prefer nice trades, though? Like, because they do like the hardcovers that collect like 12 issues or whatever.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
Like, I
would love to have the hardcovers, but to have a long box of like just all the singles is
yeah, that's true. It'd be nice. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's something about the collectability and something about how you grew up and you had those singles and all of your sweaty little paws. Like that just feels like it would feel like a lot better to me. Like a hardcover is like, oh, this is cool and fancy, and I could put it on the shelf and it looks so swanky, but it doesn't have the same collectible feel of like, oh, you have all the issues.
For me, it's just a matter, it's easier to reread. That's why I like the trades.
Yeah.
Because I'm more likely to reread trades than I am to go dig for issues.
I think the price point is what's sort of selling me on it too. Like I'm sure I could pick up a lot of things for $1 each, so and if they ever like massively blew up, then you wouldn't be able to acquire the stuff cheaply. So I just feel like not that it's likely to happen that oh my god that issue's gonna be worth like $100 or anything, but
well, I just feel I like predict Valiant sooner will die later. Off in about 5 years.
I bet you there's a few issues here and there that are worth $20 or $30. I bet.
Yeah, but I think it's mostly like
I don't know. I don't think that I don't. Yeah, I don't think the Valiant ones would be worth much.
I'm just basing that on stuff like DC, where like even with the new 52, there are always a few issues that were like.
That's different though, because there's so many brainwash hardcore superhero fans, you know. So they buy up like those fucking Spider-Gwen variant covers, like
DC fans would buy Marvel Spider-Gwen. What?
No, I wasn't saying DC fans in the first. I was saying in general, mostly Marvel fans.
Because I bought a bunch of them, in the beginning. I was buying almost all, like a lot of the new 52, and I was surprised that like the Batman ones had some value. I think I still got them somewhere.
Batman, that's a popular one. That's why though.
Yeah. And like the Superman or the Detective Comics was, and I was like, whoa, it's hard to believe Action Comics, you know. And I just assume every comic after I buy it is worth like a quarter.
Yeah, me too.
So anytime something is worth more than the cover price, I'm always surprised.
Yeah. Second yeah. you open it up, it's worthless.
That's the thing. That's, you try to teach people lessons like every comic is worthless, and they just don't want to believe you. They so badly want to believe something is worth something.
If it's something you enjoy, then it was worth it.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
But just the resale value is very... Mm-hmm. Or unless you also have like some kind of pipeline or something where you have a place where you can unload it or mm-hmm. trade it in for store credit or something like that.
I wish we all lived near each other so we can just like do a rotation of each other's comics, you know? Like do it that way.
You guys will be getting a fair amount of my comics, I can tell you. And I'm not taking any of yours. Just a good way to... Yeah, I've been giving mine to Bob Breitel out of them, the mm-hmm. Comic Spectrum. Yes.
You know, I've been selling mine to various people.
Well, it's good you can sell them. I mean, I just think that for the money and time, I just don't think I'm going to get hardly... What am I going to spend all day and make $30 or something? I'm better off going to work.
I had a good time. Like there wasn't any major problems, like fanboyish moments or whatever. So it was just like me saying, "Hey, you might enjoy this comic," and then that person goes, "Yes, I would." And then you're like, "Oh, good, I connected people with comics they love." Like there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there is definitely nothing wrong with that. But should I volunteer up a new title?
Oh, you mm-hmm. want me to cover a title?
Or do you want to cover it? I didn't know if you were stalling and just doing a fill trick where you just throw out a general topic.
No,
I can do tricks. I forgot about that.
No, I was just thinking Steve's not here, so we don't have to stick to a hard and fast book schedule.
Yeah, but if we don't do it next time he shows up, we'll be in trouble.
Yeah.
Do you want to get in trouble with Steve?
No. Does he listen to these anyways?
When he's around, I don't swear as much.
Even Phil's somewhat
intimidated. Even I'm on my toes a tiny bit.
Yeah, Super Steve keeping us honest.
He's our podcast dad.
He is, totally. Yes. Yeah, so guys, I don't know if you know this, but I kind of love Atomic Robo.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually have that book. I meant to grab it.
I think I might have it, too, based on your description of it. I like Atomic Robo as well.
I think that like they have a bunch of rules where they set out like what the comic was going to be. Something like a robot will always punch like the evil dude or monster or whatever. And I don't know, a lot of stuff like appealed to me. And a lot of the ways they go about things where... I forget what volume. They might be up to volume, like, 10 right now or something. But, like, they just tell a story in the timeline that they've set out. So, like, one story will be in the 1920s, and then one will be in the 1980s. And they just sort of seamlessly...
Okay, I just grabbed it.
...weave it together.
Reminds me of kind of the Hellboy model of... You have one non-human protagonist that spans eras...
Well, it's Hellboy, but science.
So yeah. You can plug in whatever era you want to put him in, and he has a supporting cast, just like Hellboy does, and mm-hmm. it's like a useful model.
Yeah. Yeah, where a Hellboy fights, like, supernatural monsters and everything, Atomic Robo seems to always fight, like, mad scientists and...
My favorite is the vampire world. There's so little of it, but I love it.
That's so weird. I think that was solicited as 4 issues, and then it was just, like, random. It was like a vampire world, Power Rangers.
Like, little stories here and there, yeah. And there was one, like, a one-shot.
Been a while since I read a volume. I guess I was caught up in everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm like, I really need to read another volume. So I read The Flying She-Devils of the Pacific, where Atomic Robo is sort of, like, flying his experimental... jet.
And this one's in 1951, it takes place.
Yeah, just after World War II, and he runs into women that are, like, collecting all the, like, sort of like pirates, all the, like, leftover guns and ammunition and, like, tech left over by, like, the U.S. Army and everything after the war was over. And then you have, like, some Japanese, they're like, oh, the war's not over. Like, we're continuing everything on, and they develop, like, UFOs. So Robo's, like, sort of, like, weirded out when women with the jetpacks come and save him, and they're like, what? Women? He sort of gets over it, but he's just sort of surprised at the whole thing. Like, I thought you all went home and everything. So they got to stop, like, an earthquake machine and the UFOs and all this stuff from, like, destroying the states. So it's really a fun romp, I think.
Yeah, Atomic Robo always with. That's Clevenger and what's the other guy?
Scott Wagner?
Yes. But always, like, brightly colored, slightly quirky, fun. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Like, sometimes I look up reviews on some things just to see, oh, what were people thinking, or did they like this one more than the last one? And someone's one of the complaints about Atomic Robo is, I think it jumped the shark when they started adding that time traveling dinosaur. And I was just like, Atomic Robo has a lot of, like, crazy villains and stuff like that. And I'm like, the time-traveling dinosaur is the thing that threw them out of the story? Like, mind boggles. I was just like, what?
Well, I found with this, like, you can kind of start with any volume almost. Like, you don't really need to read them in order. You kind of just pick one that looks good to you.
Yeah, like, how many series, like, it doesn't matter where you drop in, they just sort of tell a story. And it doesn't really matter. Like, you can randomize the volumes if you want. And
maybe little things once in a while will carry over, but not in an important way.
Yeah, like some dude like from like 1920 might show up in 1950 and he might remember someone, but like it's not absolutely essential to the plot.
Mm-hmm. No, because I think I jumped in randomly and I backed that one Kickstarter where you got the little science kit and everything.
Mm. Oh, cool. What kind of science kit?
Oh, just like a little ruler and a little all this various. I mean, it wasn't like a
chemical. That's not a science kit. That's a fucking math kit.
Well, it's a Tom. You know, they're gonna make it sound fancy. I mean, it's not anything.
Or something.
Little beakers.
Yes, the beakers.
It wasn't that. It was the Atomic Robo Needs You Tesla Dyne Recruitment Drive.
Hmm.
How much did that cost you?
What level did I back it at?
Did you get a badge that you're like an action scientist or something?
Wish it wouldn't tell me what level I backed. I backed the $20. I got a print copy of the field guide and a recruitment mini poster.
On Kickstarter, does it have a total of everything you've ever spent?
Thankfully, no.
Because I imagine that's pretty depressing.
It doesn't even list, like, clearly how many I've backed or whatever, thankfully.
That's sort of like a video game telling you how many hours you've spent in a game. And I hate just like, that. Why?
Yeah.
But yeah, the Atomic Robo, now out in hardcover is from IDW, or you can go to atomic-robo.com for all your reading needs, which is pretty handy.
And you can always try it out on Free Comic Book Day because they always put out a one-shot, I think, eh?
Yes. Yeah.
Those are always really good. That was always really funny.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's always a really good issue.
Because at my one New York City Comic Con, I got them to sketch. I had, I think I got them to put, like, an Atomic Robo on an Iron Man sketch cover that I had.
Kind of appropriate.
Yeah. I enjoy it. And my book is actually sort of in a similar vein. It's Z-Girl and the Four Tigers, the Zero issue.
Not Z-Girl.
Or Z-Girl, if you like. I'm happy with your colonial pronunciations. Some of us broke free, but yeah, I understand if y'all still owe your allegiance to the crown.
Well, at least you can still give us state dinners and everything.
2011, and it's a Jeff Marsick. And this one is Kirk Manley, and it's a bunch of little stories, and then pinups and stuff like that. It was a good collection, and the conceit with her is just like it is with Hellboy and Atomic Robo. Like, she's this sentient zombie that's been around for, you know, hundreds of years. I don't know about thousands, but she's pretty well immortal. And unlike most zombies, she's still smart and can, you know, talk and communicate. And she has these four, what they call tigers. And they're sort of these representations of each one rules a geographic area and provides support to her. And they live long, but not as long as her. So she's gone through different ones, you know, like, so it's kind of like, again, like that whole thing where you have a support staff that rotates, but you have the main character and you can set the story wherever. So they have one that opens up in China in the 5th century BC. And they have present day Africa, and they can just move her around to wherever, whatever story you feel like. And Mark Lamming worked on one of the little stories and did a pinup in the back. Mm-hmm. And you know how much I like that. And they have a black and white story that's set with vampires on like a train from back in, you know, in around Nazi time. So they're fighting Nazis. Oh,
that's cool. Yeah.
Like, anytime you can do those types of characters. And as I talked about previously with these ones, throwing in like a bunch of cool pinups in the back is always a good way to attract, you know, it's a lot of different artists, like I said, including Mark Lamming, who we've talked about on different books before. He's kind of broken in. He was on those Planet of the Apes books and has done a bunch of other stuff. I don't know if he's, I'm pretty sure he's done some Big Two stuff by now. But yeah, it was just a really fun, that I think is always a clever story idea, whether you want to set it with science or set it with horror or magic or whatever. You can just do whatever. I want to tell a World War II story.
I'm looking at the cover of Zero right now, and it's a friggin' awesome cover.
Yeah, yeah, it's really sharp.
She looks really badass. She's like this naked blue-looking girl with these like leathers or straps all over and bullets on her boobs.
Yeah, and she'll have, you know, and she can be stabbed and shot and everything, and she's still able to survive.
I want. Oh my god, and the pages look good inside too.
Yeah, it's a good. Phil's so used to my normal low standard of books.
Yeah. This looks cool.
He's surprised when I bring a good one to the. But yeah, I think if you like Hellboy, that type of Atomic Robo, I mean, it's more of the darker tone, but if you like those, like, I want stories told in all kinds of different settings.
Is this something you think I'll be able to get in a trade eventually, or?
I would imagine so. I think they've been, because I got that in, what, 2011, 2012? Okay, so it's been around for a couple years. Mm-hmm. So
if you ever see at a convention, you want to keep your eye out?
This like, was my one New York Comic Con. He's okay. East Coast based, because I know someone who I think works in his booth and helps him out sometimes, and they're all based in New York City. So
yeah,
I don't get that much exposure to New York City stuff, unfortunately.
No Disneyland there.
Boo hoo hoo. Well, also the weather and everything else. I mean, we make trips to New York, but I really don't like going during Comic-Con anymore, because I feel like if I'm going to New York, I should go to New York to enjoy New York and not go to New York and sit in a stupid convention hall.
We're getting too old for crowds and lineups.
Well, just, you know, New York has so much to see, places to eat, things to do.
Places to get mugged.
Well, we're not getting indoors.
I'll pass, thanks. I'm not going there. Well, I've seen movies.
A lot of good
punk rockers in the subways. Fuck that. Who the fuck's going to get subways? That's fucking so dangerous. I would never get on a subway.
I ride the subway here in L.A. all the time.
Now I'm going to be scared for you every day.
So you're scared for me when I ride the subway, Phil?
Oh, that's right. Toronto, you have that. That's right. I took it that one time at a fan expo, and it was the worst experience of my life. What? There were punk rockers. I wasn't wrong about that. Well, they hang out in the subways.
That's what you don't like, Phil, the punk rockers?
Well, it's all those 80s movies. They're always the bad guys.
See, no, what happens is then you start dancing and then you have some kind of duel with your switch knives and everything.
It's creepy going underneath a tunnel where, like, it's, I don't know.
You like the bendable subway, too?
I've seen too many horror movies, I think. I'm scared of living in my own house. It's horrible.
You know, with all that talk, I figure you'd be the one out in the woods instead of Kevin.
I do. I probably belong out there, but then I can't get comics. That's what's keeping me.
You know, this is all reminding me of Samurai Jack, which sort of does that.
Uh-oh.
Same type of thing.
I don't understand why it's popular, Samurai Jack.
It's because it's like Hellboy, Atomic Robo, and like random encounters with like crazy people in the subway. Everything you guys are talking about,
you're comparing to Atomic Robo today.
No, but isn't Samurai Jack set in a specific time period, though?
It's in the future where he encounters every genre manageable.
That's right. You talked about this once, and I ended up liking it because of the bad guys or something like that.
Yeah.
I forget what, but I remember, liking it after you explained it.
Yeah, they told every story possible.
I think I saw one or two episodes of the cartoon back in the day.
Did you like it?
It was all right. I've gotten kind of pickier about, I don't watch as much animation as I used to for some reason. I used to watch all the superhero cartoons too, and I don't watch any of them anymore.
Yeah. Well, they're not as good now. They're more kiddish, aren't they?
Well, part of it is also, I just think you reach a certain number of hours of that stuff that you've watched, and you've seen every plot recycled so many times.
Whoa.
That's why I don't rush for the movies, because I'll always find better stories of those characters in the comics.
Well, I was going to say, isn't that your excuse to drop comics then? Well, I've seen the same things so many times.
No, I never say that. It's just, I just would rather read a comic than go see the movie. But, like, I love seeing the movie once I see it, but at the end of the day,
I think the comics are less derivative than the cartoons. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only is Phil Wright, are they built for kids, they're really pretty limited in their structure usually.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I liked our 90s superhero comics, or the old Spider-Man one, you know, things like that.
Those haven't aged any better, I don't think, to some degree.
I don't know. I think the old Spider-Man has charm. Like it feels good to watch that. Like me, I love watching old He-Man.
I like them old Spider-Man are sentimental value for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we say old Spider-Man, we're usually referring to like the 90s series, not the 60s.
No, so. I was talking about the 60s.
Oh,
yeah.
I know Phil. Phil's an old soul.
The 90s I like too, though, but the 60s just has a kind of charm. I don't know. It's just
the 90s. Still. I thought it was really cool. They tried to work like heavy continuity into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's really, like, they had a lot of multi-part.
That's how they got me, though, because remember they'd have, like, one scene and you'd see maybe, like, Speedball fly by or something, or the Phoenix go off, like.
Oh, I only watched those things, I'm embarrassed to say, probably, you know, in the early 2000s. Like, I didn't watch them when they were coming out.
Oh, okay.
I watched them and so I had a DVR, and you just tell the machine, and it records, like, you know, in a week, it'll record, like, 20 of them or whatever. Yeah. And the DVR has been a game changer for me. I think I watch more TV in general, and I tend to watch it in bigger bunches. I trade weight on my TV.
Not a PVR.
Did you guys ever watch any of the indie type cartoons like Savage Dragon or Wildcats or anything like that?
I think I have on YouTube in the last few years, but like the Wildcats one, man, with all the guitar work and everything.
Yeah,
and
Savage Dragon was bad.
Yeah, I
not
think
that good.
No, I think it was on Teletoon, and it was, like, reruns, and that's when I caught Savage Dragon. The one that was really intrigued me was the Max.
Oh, yeah, the Max is good.
Figure out what was going on.
It's because it was exactly like the comics, though, I believe. So that's why it was good.
I like the Spawn HBO cartoon.
That one was good, too. And wasn't Rusty the Robot, wasn't that a comic one, too? Rusty and his big robot or big guy or something?
Oh, the Frank Miller. Was it Frank Miller?
I don't know. I never read the comic.
But I thought I sent Phil maybe because that Lady Death one was on YouTube. So I watched
Yes,
that.
Yes, I saw that. I didn't like that one. I don't remember.
Well, should we do one more round the horn so that Steve doesn't get mad at us?
Sure.
All right, Phil. Start us up.
I got some quick ones, I guess. Two trades. I'll just mention quickly. So I finally caught up and I read the third trade of Black Science.
Oh.
Holy shitballs.
Yeah. That's everything sort of like, well, the first arc sort of resolves itself.
Yeah, it's fucked. Like,
yeah.
When I said no one's safe, like, I didn't even know the meaning of that yet, I don't think. But yeah, it's just like the last issue or two, like it just gets so crazy. Like this collects 12 to 16, and basically this story is the father that was dead is actually alive, so it's him. Basically, they find out that all these planets they visit to, they're bringing diseases, and they're just screwing these planets up. So the dad's trying to save this planet, and they have to deal with the timer going off before it goes off. And I guess I can't really talk about any of the crazy stuff because it's too fresh still. But yeah, this series, I thought it was going to get dull for me, but because after Kevin explained like what was up ahead a bit, but no, it's just getting more exciting. And the other one was Manifest Destiny. Have you been keeping up on that, Kevin?
No, I only read the first trade for that.
Okay, I read the third trade, where in this one they meet these little creatures, these little talking birds. And the really cool thing about this one is, like at the end of the comic, they like them and the birds are like friends. They helped each other out with this stuff. And they're having dinner, and then when the birds are asleep, the Lewis and Clark and all the people they're with, they go and kill all the birds in their sleep. Like, it's really fucked up. Like, if you just feel so bad for these, like, little creatures. And, but yeah, this is a comic that also continues to surprise me. Like, it's just them exploring around and running into, these weird arcs, and there seems to be, like, a new type of wildlife around them or something. You should really check out the rest, Kevin. I think... it's very quality, and it's still ongoing, so there's more to come. But those are two Image books that I definitely recommend, and they have three trades each right now.
Should I throw another Image book into the hopper?
Might as well. We're an Image podcast, pretty much.
Oh. Yeah, I was going to say, we're what might be a Black Science podcast, the way I think every one of us has reviewed it at one
point. It's true. I'm out now, though. I'm out of Black Science, as we talked about, until another trade comes out.
Well, I could easily make this a Valiant podcast, guys.
Well, we cut you off from that, I think.
I want to be known as Sunlight on Snow now. But I was going to spotlight another Jonathan Hickman joint here with East of West.
I read the first trade of that one.
And with the crazy, always lovely Nick Dragotta artwork. You know what I realized about this book? Like, I read six issues in a row. Like, usually I don't let books, like, stack up like that. But I'm only interested in some of the stories.
I got bored. I never collected after that. Like, I thought it was such good quality. The art was amazing. The story was really good. But for some reason, I also found the story kind of boring.
Yeah, I think he writes in a specific way that, you know, everyone won't necessarily be hooked on everything and come back. But this is sort of like a sci-fi western where alternate history where...
with the apocalypse, like the Four Horsemen apocalypse, yeah. Which was what I thought I would draw me in because they are pretty cool.
And the US think is I made split it. Off into like seven different nations.
I think I was with you, Phil. I think I made maybe five or six issues. It was a good book. It just didn't, I don't know, it didn't hook me.
That's why I think it was certain concepts like kept me going. I was like, oh, like the Horsemen of the Apocalypse. But then as I read these six issues, like they're not really in the issues. And I always like when Death was going around doing some crazy stuff, or like they'll have issues just focusing on certain nations or people. And some of these people, I'm just like, yeah, not so into those people. Like they have sort of like the Asian group of people, and I'm like, oh yeah, that like really really excited. Or then like the native people that use all this technology, like I love those types of people. But then you also get into these other like either Texans or some Confederacy stuff, and I'm like, not so grabbing me. Like, some of that stuff, I'm just, like, I wouldn't need to read, like, another story of these guys. But they did have one issue that's, like, that G.I. Joe Silent issue, where they have some, like, ninja guys infiltrating a country and trying to assassinate someone. And I was just like, wow, that G.I. Joe comic, that is just, that at this point, like, the amount of influence and legend that comic is... like, is anyone going to ever stop doing, like, tributes to, like, that G.I. Joe Silent issue?
It's a good idea. I mean, it's a clever idea, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we read a Thunderbolts comic where they decided to go without sound.
That was a whole month.
It seems natural.
But I was just thinking, like, Six Gun had, like, a crazy
Six Gun's Silent awesome.
Issue. which is probably one of the best Silent issues like I've ever read.
What number was that around?
Like 21 or something.
Okay, yeah. I forget. I need to catch up on that because I'm missing a bit of the end.
Yeah. I would probably say, like, my favorite Cullen Bunn book is Six Gun. But, yeah, that's what I realized about the East of West. I'm like, I don't really need to read it month to month. Like, I think maybe at the beginning, like, they kept on checking in on different characters or they focused on certain characters more. But nowadays, I'm just, like, certain aspects of it, I'm not so into. So I still think it's really interesting and good, but I'll catch up on it at some point in the future.
Also, my dog was squeaking a toy, and I forgot to mute it. Well, I bet it's going to get collected. Because doesn't his stuff always get collected in one big chunk?
Yeah, they have trades, and now they're going to hardcovers, yeah.
Yeah, that might be one I'll re-pick up, too, because like I say, it was neat, but it was... because maybe the rest of the story, maybe it gets really exciting. Because how far... What did you talk about? Was that the first trade?
It's at issue 24 now. I read 19 to 24.
Also, I bet you it reads better, like a lot of his stuff, in batches, mm-hmm. rather than trying to pick up an issue here or there.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the earlier issues might have been more dense, too. Like, you were really trying to pick up the history and what, like, the message was and what all these believers were doing. And now it's sort of, like, set into, I wouldn't say a pattern, but you sort of feel like a war is coming. And, like, there's a primary story. It seems, like, less confusing than it did before.
I've never been big on his indie stuff. I know I should like it probably, but I don't. I don't know. I prefer his superhero stuff.
Oh, I was crazy wild about Manhattan Projects too. Like,
oh, I did like that one. That's true.
Yeah,
I did. That's another one. I only read two books.
But where that is like alternate history, it still sort of fits into some world that resembles ours. Like East to West. Like, it seems like everything has totally. Like, changed in every... It doesn't, like... Of course, there's, like, buildings and stuff, but it's not like it resembles our world, like, at all.
Well, is it time for me to round out the last round table?
The big hit of the show, the best comic yet. Tell us about it.
What's your pick of the week, Andrew? The top of the stack.
Yeah, don't let us down. This is going to be a good one.
I think Z-Girl was my top of the
That was a good one, but you should have done that one second, but uh-oh.
Well, as a quick one, I just wanted to say, based on Steve's diffusing. Also, randomly, I picked up Spawn 261.
Oh,
okay.
Which might be the first Spawn comic I've bought. I don't know, maybe ever. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to talk about it when Steve's not on the show.
I had another comic that Steve had recommended that I bought that I was going to tell him was awesome too, but he's not here.
But I also, like I said, in that new batch, I bought a few ones. I bought Vampirella number 1 from Dynamite. I didn't know if maybe, Phil, you had gotten this one either.
I read, which year is it from? Is it from this year?
It's this year. It's the Kate Lee.
Okay. I didn't read that one. I read the previous one.
He-Man, Casalos, colored by Valentina Pinto, lettered Erica Schultz, main cover by Chrissy Zulo. But it's a Dynamite book, so in the back you can flip open. It's like this huge cover gallery of all kinds.
I was big Vampirella fan, like the older stuff all the way through the 90s. Like, I loved that shit a lot. But then eventually, I think it went to anime style eventually for a while, and that's when I got out of it.
This one is more traditional, like your regular, but they've given her kind of a redesign. Her outfit kind of reminds me of almost Xenoscope-y.
Well, is it not just pants and a jacket now, kind of thing?
I thought it was like a
it's kind of like a short kind of tight. So like it's like a bodysuit, but it only comes to the top of her thighs. Okay. And then it's really tight and it's got all these buckles up the midriff. So
go on.
say it slower. But in the issue, in the beginning of it, she does one in her old red swimsuit. She has a few pages where she wears that.
But she can't go around in her old suit. Like, that's one thing I wish was always different, because I felt bad reading the comic, because that's the only thing that made the comic dirty, you know?
Right. Well, she only does it for a few pages. She has one adventure that way. But she's moving to L.A. And she has this... she's with, like, this werewolf love interest. And then the butler guy that drives him around. Now, Coleridge.
Is he the magician dude? I forget their names.
And I don't know. Tristan is the werewolf. Coleridge, not just a chauffeur. So I don't know if these are, like, regular... supporting cast, because
it sounds like at least maybe one of them, but like it depends, because she's had so many, but she's always had a regular ones that always popped up.
Yeah, these guys, I don't know. So she goes and sets up in Hollywood. They find this big gothic mansion somehow, and they have a joke about how they found that, and she gets attacked, and so they're going to work social media in, because someone takes a picture of it. So she finds, like, this brand manager, tries to hit her up with having her hired, and that's when the new outfit gets debuted. So it seems like I don't know the book, but this one has a lot of humor in it, while it also tries to have kind of gore and graphic elements to it as well. I mean, it's not adult, like, you could give this to I don't think it's any more violent or sex filled than your average Marvel or DC book, which means it's not child appropriate by any stretch. But it just, I don't know. And I liked it, but I don't know. I guess Vampirella is kind of a black spot for me. I don't really, never really read a lot of it, so I don't know what to, get to it, but I enjoyed, you know, it's a fun setup. A lot happens in the opening issue. Mm-hmm. I like that they're trying to keep some of the humor to it.
Do they have a cliffhanger ending to grab you for a second issue?
There is, but it's not anything. There's a concurrent story where they're luring these, like, extra actors out, and they think they're filming a horror movie, but it's really they're being attacked by actual monsters. That's the B story, and I assume they're going to weave them together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anything based in L.A. is always worth a couple extra chuckles for me. And more importantly, they have a big ad in the middle for a 4-issue King's Quest, which is basically the team... the Defenders of the Earth.
Oh, so not the old PC game?
No, so it's going to be basically...
The Phantom, right?
Yes, Flash Gordon, Mandrake the Magician, all those guys. So that's written by Ben Acker and Heath Corson. And Ben Acker is the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
And there's also a book coming out that collects all the miniseries that take place before that of the characters. So I imagine it all ties in together. It's called, like, whoever the writer is, I forget.
But Ben Acker.
And yeah, it's all the the stuff they did.
And art with Dan McDade. And I know we've talked about that. I think we've talked about that series, because it was that cartoon and it was a newspaper series and everything. And I know, but I may be mistaking this conversation that I had with Dan Pua, a.k.a. Vince McMahon, and Andrew Shaw, I think, are fans of those.
Okay, we get it. You have lots of friends.
They're internet friends.
Hey, so those internet are friends.
Isn't everyone internet friends?
Two books, so hopefully we'll have Super Steve joining us again next time, and we'll see who can't make next time. To keep our rotating schedule, but until then, keep reading them independent comic books, and thanks for listening.
Don't read Marvel.
Or DC.
Yeah, read some.
Read Valiant. Come on, let's be real.
Boy, Kevin's going to have a lot of editing. Whatever happened to the intro with that thing. You can keep your